He and John Colbert, or as we used to say, John Cobit.
Cobit.
Until he changed his name. So. How you doing, John?
Doing well, Mick. How are you? It's been a long time since we spent a meaningful amount of time talking. I know we've had some exchanges.
Seriously.
Great to hear from you. It's amazing.
Seriously. Yeah. I don't know if you had a chance to check out the website yet or listen to anybody's interviews yet.
Yeah, I did. I listened to a little bit. I didn't spend that much time. I did check out the website, so I have a great collection of folks. I'm honored to be invited to participate in this. And then listen to a little bit of Beggs and a little bit of Susan Oestreicher, and that was it. So I heard a few, just the beginning, super. Like 2 or 3 minutes, just to get a feel.
Well, okay. So first of all, it's about 12 hours worth of interviews, so not something you're going to sit down this afternoon and do.
Yep.
But we've gotten a lot of nice feedback on it, and the people like yourself who've taken the time to share, it's been amazing. And have a number of more interviews coming up in the near future. So it'll hopefully just continue to expand as people listen.
Great, great.
Now, I always start out all of them, if you heard Susan's and you heard John's, with your earliest memories of connecting with the group.
Sure. Well, I'm going to start, Mick, and with the assumption that I think most of the folks with the group were, I would call them the Eastern Queens Villagers. And I think I'll be your first of maybe a few more of the Western Queens Villagers who join. So
great.
We were kind of late joiners, not even formally joiners, because we always felt a little bit distant from the Braddock Park crew. But we were we had a very big cluster of folk who are out in the western side, and I say western part of Queens Village, you know, 214th Street, 214th Place, Vandeveer. That was our own separate world, and we were, you know, opposite direction from where Braddock Park was and where you lived from Our Lady of Lourdes. So my first memories are, you know, if Queens Village overall is visiting my Moroni cousins. They actually lived next door to us on 214th Street. And I remember at 5 years old, 4 years old, you know, coming and visiting them on weekends and things like that. And we wound up moving next door. So I was at the corner house on 214th Street. At that time, you know, on the street, you know, up the street from us were the Cannings, McDonald's, Crowley's, Lochran's, and then down 214th Street were my next door neighbors, the Moroni's, my cousins. The Espinels were across the street. The Murphy family was a couple of doors down. The Farrells were across the street. Gruber's, the Ritters, the Egan's, Lembo's, Foley's, Malvone's. That was the whole street going down. It was all different families with kids.
Amazing.
And that, my early memories was that group there, separate from the Braddock Park crew. And I'll get to the Braddock Park crew in a minute. But even at that time, you know, again, just Queens Village memories for all of us. I remember, and Mick, you know the story pretty well. I remember, you know, coming and moving to Queens Village. That was just the time when Mike Lembo had won the Ronald McDonald shopping spree. I don't know if you recall that at all.
Yes, yes, yes.
He had free reign of I think it was S. Klein's or something like that, for 10 minutes with Ronald McDonald collecting toys and so on. And I remember that very explicitly because I was like the dream of all kids, right, to have that. Right. But then, right, you know, playing stoop ball on a street with Matt Egan and Ring Olivio around there. And I have another memory of go-kart crashes. We used to, Donnie Canning and Jimmy Lochran had designed go-karts. You're doing smash up derbies in the middle of the street. You know, there's no way, like today's world, we would have our parents would allow us to do this. But we designed these go-karts. We had giant like blocking rams in front of them. And one time I remember having spikes in front of it. It was pretty aggressive. And we'd have these crashes on the place. That was my first memories of the western side of Queens Village. Now if I look at my first memories of the crew around Braddock Park, I'll say this. Actually, I wanted to give you a disclaimer. I don't mean to disparage anybody or hurt anybody's feelings.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to share my memories. They're probably flawed. But I apologize if I say anything out of line. But I remember hearing about Braddock Park through our parents, actually. And I remember, Mick, that there was some older kids that were part of the Braddock Park crew that were a little rough and tumble at times, right? So I remember getting warned by our parents, yeah, the Braddock Park crew, they're the tough guys out there, you know, and we didn't want you going near Braddock Park. But then I also remember that as we were at Lourdes, Mick, I remember the best athletes and the prettiest girls were all at Braddock Park. and so Beggs and Riles, Joe Howard, these amazing athletes that would be, you know, always on the first string of the basketball team and baseball team.
Yeah.
And you had beautiful women, you know, Margaret McManus and Jackie Golden and Linda Benvenuto, all these beautiful women. It's like we saw that group as you guys almost like a little bit of a on a higher level than our lowly Western Queens Village folks. And then I think when I was a teenager, getting to that age, we used to have a newspaper route for Long Island Press. And we used to have to go to right by the Cedar Lanes, right by Braddock on Braddock Avenue was the pickup they drive to. And Lindsay
Paul. That's right. Right in the, it was a building right next door to Cedar Lanes.
Exactly. And that was probably like maybe, I don't know, two blocks away from Braddock Park. So I think at that point in time, we were able to forego our parents' warnings and go from time to time and socialize or even maybe fold our papers inside the park or something like that. So that was our time. So a little bit later maybe than other folks that you had on the call earlier.
Well, so you had a press route from where you lived and you would bike over to get the papers at Cedar Lane.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a hike. I mean,
remember about it then, Mick, we used to go and you had to bring your own bike. You had to buy your own basket holding the papers.
Right.
And you had to buy the canvas bag, the Long Island Press bag that would go inside. And even they would sell you, Lindsay Polyhemus would sell you the rubber bands and as well as the baggies that you had to put your paper inside of. So you had to, buy that.
So right. And you had a little book that kept your customers' names and a little boxes after their names for whether they paid and the date.
Exactly. And I was the worst. This is just me acknowledging I was the worst. I was fine on the delivery side, but I was worst on the collecting the money side. So I would collect enough money to pay the bill to Lindsay Polyhemus, who would get mad at me. But I leave my customers sometimes 2, 3, 4 weeks. I show up saying, you owe me 4 weeks back due. And they'd be so mad. Wow. But that was part and parcel. And I remember my route was 217th Street, the northern part of 217th Street up by Hillside Avenue down to, I don't know, I want to say 92nd. And then sometimes I would go 92nd all the way to Jamaica. And then Rich Gunn had 216th Street. And I, you know, like a big day, I'd be doing my route and Rich Gunn's route. So you'd have like, I don't know, 120 papers in your little basket.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's exciting. You know, now, for context for me, I always had one foot in on the west side, your group.
Yep.
And one foot at Braddock Park. And there was a period of time, I want to say fifth grade, where I was very close to Rich Gunn, and I would come to your side of town every day for a period of I'm going to say 2 years, fifth and sixth grade. Richie was a big reader,
mm-hmm.
and we used to read this mystery series with the three kids in it, and he and I would compete over, you know, what book you're up to in the series kind of thing. But I would come over to your side. I mean, I felt very much a part of, you know, the group over there. Again, as much as I felt a part of the Braddock Park group.
Yeah. And I remember, Mick, us going and we used to go to your house at lunchtime because you live close enough to Lourdes. And I remember going and we used to get we'd get our 55 cents to get our hot lunch from Tilly and the crew at and the cafeteria there. And instead of spending it on a hot lunch, I would buy a ring ding and a container of milk. And that would be, I don't know, a nickel for the container of milk and maybe 15 cents of ring ding. And the rest of the money we'd spend on nickel candy. And I used to buy, I remember, a peppermint patty. And then, like, I don't know, a couple of other pieces of candy for the other side that are there. And then we'd walk to your house at lunchtime. I don't know what we did. We'd go there, we'd walk over there, and then walk back. And we'd make it back for whatever time it was.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I have very fond memories of again, the group over there. Until it started to be that I hung out more often than not at Braddock Park. but I never felt like I lost my connection with you guys, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it was the same. I think we never, you know, probably as we became teenagers, you know, our group would be, you know, we used to hang out in street corners, man. You know, it was like, we'd hang out, I don't know if you remember coming up and 214 Street and Jamaica Avenue up in the corner there by Megan's Hardware, and there used to be a home renovation place. We used to hang out in the street corners and drink beer and tell stories and get in trouble and hop on roofs and all that kind of stuff. That was our troublesome teen times. And then I remember sometimes going, and we, as we got older, I think we start overlapping a bit more with the Braddock crew when there would be parties at Alley Pond, for example. And when we were beginning of driving, we'd go to that park. I know it was parking lot one, or I don't forget how we called it, the parking lot there. And and bring our cars and, you know, play live music, and there no one seemed to bother us, I might recall. And then, but there would be street sweeps or something. There's something, the cops would come and everybody would disappear into the woods and hide your beer and take off. And so I remember the Braddock crew being pretty active with that whole scene.
Yeah, you know, one of my strongest memories is with Mike Lembo and Billy Dandola. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that period of time where Billy was with us. Now, I always felt like he was on the outside because he was a man and we were boys.
he had facial hair, we didn't. So he could go into the liquor stores and delis and
get beer. and they swore he was in his 20s. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
Willie Burnett had facial hair too.
Well, that's right. Willie was another.
God rest his soul, by the way.
The alpha males that we had. but we had tricked Billy sitting in a chair in my backyard, and Lembo was keeping him busy while I went upstairs to the second floor window and filled a bucket of water and dumped it on his head. Now, we thought that was hysterical. Billy proceeded to beat the shit out of Lembo because he understood that Lembo was the stall. But then the thing that really was amazing, Billy took his shirt off. Now, he always wore white T-shirts. He always wore an undershirt. he takes his shirt off, and he's got a full hairy chest. And I'm sitting there, you know, looking at Lembo like, is he one of us? Like, I barely have hair anywhere, never mind on my chest. But we used to go over Billy's house for dinner once in a while. Mr. Dandola always ordered pizza. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever had this experience, he would, before anybody touched any of the pizza, Mr. Dandola would come with a pizza rolling knife and cut off all of the crust.
I've never had that.
And then he would put all of the crust on his plate, and then you could eat the rest of the pizza if you wanted it. But nobody could have crust except for Billy's dad. Now, the other thing is, if you remember, Billy had a sister named, I want to say Debbie.
Debbie, she is still active on Facebook. She's actually quite active. I see her with some of the old Queens Village crew active. So
no kidding. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So we were in Billy's pool in the backyard, me and Lembo and Debbie, and Mike made the mistake of calling Debbie a word that I won't repeat now. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen Billy so angry and do so much damage someone than on that day. And it was, you know, when I look back on that now, you realize how, I'll say, progressive the Dandolas were to have a girl of color as a member of their family. I mean, that at the time it didn't really hit me as anything.
Yep.
But today I look back at that time and say, wow, these people were light years ahead of anyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. I don't recall the Lembo getting beat up all these parts. I'm going to convince him to join you on a call and share those same memories with him. But I do, I'm on the Dandola front. I do remember we used to go to this house a lot, and he was right across from Jimmy or Timmy Nelson was across the street from him.
That's right. That's right.
And I think that was that 90th, I think? I don't recall.
Yeah.
91st. But I remember going, and his dad, I think, was working a lot and not at home much. And especially in our teen years, we used to go up into his room and you know, drink and whatever else we were doing back then. And I remember somehow he got hold of some like a gallon jug of Gallo wine or something. and he and Toots, what was Toots' real name? His cousin.
Wow. That hurt.
Yeah.
That you said that.
Yeah.
Oh, who was that?
I see his face. I want to say John. Jim, I don't know. Someone will hear this and know it was. Tootsie, we call him. And I remember the two of them split the gallon of Gallo wine and wound up getting sick out Billy's window on the floor, and all like the Gallo wine stained like the front. And the next morning, I remember coming by in our bikes, maybe going to deliver our papers or something, and there was Billy with his father like scowling at him, scrubbing the side of the house of the Gallo covered vomit that was coming down the side of it. And so I have that memory too. I don't know why.
Wow. That's amazing. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about, because it's a memory of mine, but not too many people share. Do you remember the kid, Jimmy Lennox? He lived over right next to Richie Gunn in the Dolan's house.
Right. So he used to sing in the choir with me at Our Lady of Lourdes. Jimmy was always a smaller kid.
Yes. Had
an angelic voice. And
yes.
Very, very small. So I was like his, at the time before my voice changed, I was like his second or third string quarterback kind of thing, where when he wasn't available or something, I'd get occasionally a choir solo. But I remember Jimmy being the guy singing that. And he was always a smaller kid amongst us at the time. It was my recollection.
Right. And he left in sixth grade. He had a brother, Philip, and he had a little sister who at the time was a baby. I don't recall her name, but he, if you remember, he ran away for weeks, and when he came back, there was nothing left of the kid. He had lost whatever little weight he had had on him, and then he stayed for a few days, and he ran away again, and at that point they shipped him off to another foster home. That was the last we ever saw of him.
Yeah, I don't remember all that. I remember Jimmy. I remember now that you're talking about it, it kind of comes back that he was a foster child. I didn't recall that just until now. But I don't.
The family was the Dolans.
Yeah.
I want to say that they lived two doors up from Richie, three doors up from Richie.
Could have been. Yeah. Yeah. I don't recall that.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, this kid lives with me in my brain for a variety of reasons. And every time I speak to someone about it, they go, I don't know who you're talking about. And thankfully, Joe Howard finally confirmed. Yeah, I remember that happening. I remember Jimmy Lennox. I was like, oh good. Yeah. I was starting to lose my mind a little bit.
Rich may remember too. So being you so close, so we'll need to close loop on that. See if he's still around.
Interesting. So the guys in your group, Franny, Mike Lembo, Franny's brother is John.
John Murphy, John Murphy, right? So he's a slightly older group than us. So the core group, I guess, that we would have would be Franny, Rich, you when you're in town, when you're on our side of town. Later years, Marty Brady joined our group, Mike Lembo, Jerry Foley was our age when we were younger. And funny enough, I bumped into Jerry Foley, just recently out in Southfold, New York, and he's doing very well for himself. Yeah. So he was always down the block, from us, way at the far corner of the block. So we used to do some things very young, but then later, I think he went in a different group with, Steve Palermo, Mike Harrington, that crew.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, and I remember being at Jerry's house once or twice. Again, you were on one end of the block and he was on the other. Yeah.
Right. So where are we going with this?
No, I just was trying to confirm who was in the group.
That was a group. And then now as we get teenagers, it grew. We started hanging around with some of the older kids on our block, too. So Mickey Farrell was across the street. He was a bit older than us. His sister, Debbie, lived there, same house. John Murphy and the Murphys had two older sisters, Margaret and Nora, and two younger, James and Kathleen as well. So I was a big Irish family there in the greenhouse. Yeah. And Mrs. Murphy was used to run the show of all of Queens Village, I think. She was running the bingos. She was active at the bazaars.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. She used to run the bingos over on Jamaica and 222nd, probably 221st over there somewhere is a bingo hall. She used to be really into bingo and really into the, I don't know, the Rosemary.
Right near the Queens Theater? That's
just past it. Yeah. Like it was like maybe two blocks past it. It's right across. So Mick, do you remember this now? Do you remember the shopping by your house? There was a shopping place, which I don't remember what the name of it is now, that was on Jamaica Avenue. And it was just next to down a block from Stutzman's. And there used to be a back lot there that was not developed.
And yeah,
we used to go back there and hang around.
In between the apartment buildings and the back of the homes.
Yes. So we used to go there and hang out as kids. And I don't know, we were making forts or causing trouble. I'm not sure what we're doing back there.
Yeah. So at the time it was called Bohacks.
Bohacks, that was it. Yes, that was the store.
Right. And then I want to say it turned into a place called Packers sometime later. And I don't even know if it's there anymore. But yeah, I remember that lot well. We had a jump over the gate, over the fence, had like a brick wall with a fence on top.
Right. And then I thought we built some forts, and it was like, I thought that was like our turf, kind of, so to speak.
Yes.
And I remember getting invaded by like another crew was going to come over or something.
Yes.
I remember.
Yeah, we had spike sticks set up to prevent them from coming in. I want to say it was Paulie's older brother, Joe, Paulie Sojin's brother, Joe, and the older guys that lived up that end of the block from me, Timmy O'Connor.
Yeah,
guys like that, because
they were a tough crew. I think that's how the Braddock group got its rep was. Yeah, there was a pretty tough crew over there, and I remember that we were the younger, you know, probably pain neck kids, the younger kids, and they would come and try to invade our Bohack empty lot.
I remember that well, and we used to go into the apartment buildings also. That's where like Ellen Donovan lived.
Ellen Donovan used to live there. Yep, I remember.
Danny Clarkin.
I remember Danny Clarkin. Yeah, now I see Danny Clarkin's face. I forgot about him. I haven't heard that name.
Yeah, actually, I wouldn't have remembered except that some of the pictures that I posted on the website, there's pictures of Dan.
Oh wow.
Included in there. Yeah. And he had an older brother, but I can't remember his name right now. Tommy Clarkin. That's it. Yeah. But yeah, I remember being over there quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. Then your house was very, very generous with Jimbo would be around, your brother, and you had an older sister, I think.
I had three older sisters. The sister that you probably remember was my sister Nancy. She would have been Fat Jerry's age. So not the next older group, but the group above that.
Right. She was an adult for my
baby. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But I had three older sisters, and then my brother Jimmy and my brother Tommy.
Right. So yeah, no, I remember that you know, hanging around there, and I'm gonna put you on a spot now because I remember you were of our crew. I thought you were the first one that used to like officially date a girl. Like you dated Sue L.
Larman.
Susan Larman, and she lived right down the block or two blocks from you or something like that. She was over there, I remember. And I remember we used to walk by your house. We used to walk by our house, you know, coming to or from the lunch ring-ding visits. And then also there, and I remember thinking, oh, Mickey's the guy, you know, he's got a girlfriend, you know.
So Sue Larman was a year older than us.
That's right.
And the way that we met was I had a fist fight with a kid named Robert Omundson, who lived across the street from Sue Larman. And Robert was one of these kids that was just constantly, you know, getting on your nerves. And he had a dad who insisted that he fights. Right. Oh, wow. This was not a guy who came in and said, hey, guys, break it up. You know, let's all, you know, be friends and go home. His father would come out and say, Robert, he called you a name, hit him. And so I'm looking at the dad like, you're making a big mistake here. I'm going to beat your son into the ground. And the dad ordered him to fight me. And he did. And he got a bloody nose and whatever else I was able to do. And out of nowhere, Susan Larman comes up and kicks me right in the nuts. And I went down. And I remember being in a lot of pain. And I decided that I was going to get up and punch her in the face. And I did. I gave her a bloody nose, and that was it. That was love at that point. We were madly in love, and it lasted, I want to say 6 months until what? She was courted by Steve Redunya.
Steve Redunya. Wow. That's a name from the past.
Yeah. That's a name. Right. And he was an eighth grader and I was a lowly seventh grader. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why on earth would she want to be with me? So.
Yeah, that's
a fun memory. Thank you.
That's funny. That's funny. Well, we're on the path. Let's have some fun. Let's go further down here. other girlfriends and relationships and things like that. I'll expose myself a little bit first, then I can tease others. I remember in sixth grade, I think you and I were the same class, possibly. Sister Eleanor's class, 6'4".
Yes, yeah. You and I were always in the same class a lot.
So I think we were often together. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but like, let me try. Do you remember in fourth grade, I remember being in the schoolyard lining up. We should line up on the wall next to the convent there. And that's the place where Karen Martelli was hit by a car.
On the street side, not in the schoolyard side.
Not in the schoolyard, on the street side. I actually watched the whole thing happen. I remember
no kidding.
Emotionally scarred from that. Because it was just a horrible memory. And fortunately, she was pretty beat up and broken jaw and broken.
Yeah, she had her mouth wired.
I remember. And I don't know, for some reason, I always had this thing about that moment. And I remember in sixth grade where I guess I had a crush on her, but I don't recall it exactly. I remember she came up, was collecting papers or giving out papers, and she hit me with her wrist in the eye, and she thought I kissed her. She thought I kissed her hand. And she went back to the room and said, oh, Colbert kissed me. Oh, Colbert kissed me.
Colbert.
And I remember being so, like, had in full denial, A, of I didn't kiss her, and B, you know, not, there's no way am I going to go and acknowledge that I had a crush on her. And I remember just being this incredible pressure and tension at that time from that moment. That was probably sixth grade-ish. Oh, no, it was sixth grade. I know that for a fact. And then I had another situation. I remember back to the newspaper route story where I was delivering papers on 217th Street. And you're driving, delivering your papers. You picture this. You're going down the sidewalk. It probably all cracks the sidewalk and so on. You know, your basket, you're kind of juggling it, and you're taking papers. And you take them, you flip them to the stoop, and if you're a good paper boy, you'd hit the top step, and that'll be great. But sometimes you got a little more aggressive, and you threw a little harder. And I remember breaking a window, and the window I broke was Mary Ellen Werner's family's house there. And I remember breaking the window. It took me. I went and had to, you know, go and collect money to pay for the window, repair glass, whatever it was. And it probably took a little longer than that happened. But I remember then having a crush on Mary Ellen Warner for some reason at that time. I remember going, where was probably seventh or eighth grade, my seventh grade. And I remember we had this whole thing planned out. So I had like her friends and then my friends, and we were sending messages back and forth. And I remember going and knocking on her door and asking for Mary Ellen to say if we can go out. You know, that was the thing, right? You go out. And I remember that time.
You were good. You were brave.
Yeah, that was a lot of stress. I remember that time she politely said, "Oh, I have another boyfriend," or something like that at the time. And so it never came to be. So my memory of first crushes was crushed, so to speak.
Wow.
So those were fun. Those were fun times. And I remember one more quickie about before you go to other people would be I remember so there was on 214th Street, there was a new younger girl who moved on a block. And then I was kind of interested in her, and she was maybe a little interested in me. I wasn't sure. And I remember she started dating somebody else, some other kid down the block. And Suzanne Oerstreicher volunteered herself to be my girlfriend from school and came to hang out and with us. And I remember sitting on someone's stoop with my arm around Suzanne Oerstreicher, so that way we make Donna, this other girl, jealous. of whatever relationship I have with Susan. And Susan was, you know, let's call it, she was very well developed then, and she was very womanly, and she was like, you know, a very, you know, dynamic lady. So it was like a big thing for me to be sitting, my skinny self sitting with my arm around Suzanne Oerstreicher, so I can make Donna down the block jealous of us.
That's hysterical.
She was really a good participant in that whole thing. She was I to this day I owe her for that one.
That's great. So the lesson of all of this is that if you want to fall in love with somebody, you have some kind of an accident at the beginning.
Oh yeah, that's it. That's it. Definitely. That's I remember, you know, another. I remember, you know, Mike Lembo and Kathy Ferris at one point. Do you remember Kathy Ferris?
I do remember Kathy Ferris, but I don't.
I don't know if they ever were an official thing, but they were kind of interested in each other for a while. And I'm trying to think of other relationships. Obviously, Johnny Begins and Margaret were they were the couple, right? They were America's couple.
Yeah, John was way ahead of the rest of us. You know, I remember thinking that he seemed a lot older than us, even though, you know, he was 6 months older, but I remember thinking that he was way ahead of the game.
Yeah.
So you really didn't come to the park. I mean, you know, a lot of guys from the park because of Malloy.
Yeah. So that's where I got from Malloy, is where Joe Howard and Chris Warren and Riles, I think Riles at Malloy, right? And then, and Begins, obviously. So I knew that them closer from then. And then Johnny, I'm still in touch with now to this day. Like, we don't talk that much, but unfortunately, when, you know, news comes, like unfortunately the passing of Lisa Raybert and so on, we had a call and caught up. And so Johnny, I feel still close to, even though we're, you know, whatever, 1,000 miles away from each other, him in Florida and me being still in the New York, Connecticut area. But yeah, that was the crew that I still, you know, stay reasonably. I'll see Joe and Chris. I remember when Joe's security business was up off Park Avenue and like 23rd, 24th Street. I was on 28th Street and Park Avenue. So I used to see him for lunch, and Chris was working with some kind of a publishing company, I think, in the area too. So we'd get lunch together at that time. That was after Malloy. So we see each other then, but yeah, that's the crew. But I remember that the group overall, and my cousin, which we talked about, Mike Maroney, was, I think, also in and out. So you see him in a lot of the pictures of that group at that time, you know, and he, 'cause he lived over on 91st and 221st or whatever the street was there, I think. So he used to make it to Braddock Park from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing for me. You know, when we think about the park, we don't think of it as a group. We think of it as these series of circles,
yep.
expanding circles. So by the time we got to high school, there were people from St. Francis, you know, people like Henry Nembeck and people from Molloy, like Billy Feehan. And there was this much, much broader group of people than just, you know, guys that lived on the east side of Queens, Queens Village, you know, that kind of thing. And that was the interesting thing for me as I go through this, is how much of a magnet it was that connected people. Mm-hmm. It brought people together that normally wouldn't have been. And then the big thing is that it sort of held people in that place. You know, it kept you connected in that way.
And I think also when you had the cross-fertilization of folks like yourself coming over, you know, I remember that was a name we haven't brought up. Tommy Boland was.
Tommy Boland, yes.
Tommy used to live near Braddock Park, and he spent a lot of time.
222nd Street, right?
Yeah. He's lived near, and he used to spend a lot of time with us West Queens Villagers. So we knew Tommy very, very well. Last I heard, he was in Chicago, I think, but I have lost touch with him, unfortunately. But Tommy was very active. Both he knew the park crew very well, and then also knew us out west.
Yeah. I want to say that he lived like up the street from PS33.
Yeah, he's right across the street from PS33. So I think I'm trying to remember the street layout there. It was like his house was close to the corner, like a couple of doors in, facing the PS33 a lot, which was another kind of interesting bridge because we used to. So Braddock Park, again, I'll come back to the point I made earlier that when we were kids growing up, you know, that was like those older kids there. It was not a place that if our parents caught us there, you'd be grounded because it had a bit of a reputation. But a lot of the kids our age would also hang out in PS33 in the lot there when we were allowed to, that the back area of PS33. And I remember that a little bit too. I don't know what we did back there, just like hanging out. I don't even know there wasn't any swings or anything like that, but we used to go in that schoolyard for a bit.
No, there was a definite period of time where a lot of the guys from the park hung out at PS33. I want to say it was for a summer, and then we also had an after school program there. A guy by the name of Mr. Barnabas used to run it, and he would hold like pool tournaments and knock hockey tournaments. And upstairs, they had a gym where we had basketball tournaments. And there was this whole after school program, arts and crafts. It was amazing. We were there a lot.
Yeah, we had the same thing with PS 109, which was down the block from us on 214th Street. So we had PS 109. I don't remember it being after school, but I remember it being a summer program. Where we'd go, so when school ended, you'd go to PS 109 and you'd go and do all the stuff you just mentioned. It was arts and craft lanyards. You'd make the little lanyard thingies. You'd learn a hawk knot and a butterfly knot and a cobra stitch and all these things.
Then
you'd have knock hockey and bumper pool and stuff like that. And it was basketball court upstairs. And then like once a week, we'd go to Jamaica High School to go swimming. I don't know if you remember Jamaica High School had a pool. So they'd load us up in a bus and ship us off to Jamaica High School to go swimming.
I do remember that. Wow. That again, that's another deeply buried memory.
Wow. So maybe could we skip over to Our Lady of Lourdes a little bit more?
Yeah, I was going to say, what are your thoughts? Because that's the other overlapping circle here, right?
Yeah. So Lourdes. Yeah, we talked about Lourdes a bit. We talked on the sports side where, you know, Vegans and I think Jimmy Riley and Joe Howard and Chris were all active. I'm pretty sure that was mostly the basketball team. We also had the Little League, the Hollis Bel Air Little League group that was down up on across from Creedmoor. That was a lot that was there. But John,
right,
John,
next to the YMCA.
Next to the YMCA, yeah. But that the group would often they'd have the Our Lady of Lourdes team, but also we'd have the league there. I remember marching in the parade. That would meet at the Red Robin or something like that on 217th Street and Hillside Avenue. You'd meet in the parking lot there, and we used to march from there to the Hollis Bel Air past Van Buren and go in. And like our dads were the coaches, and you had your uniforms. It was a big like opening day type thing. All I remember is lining up and getting our uniforms together and everything like that. So back to Lourdes, I remember some early memories of I know it's very easy to kind of go down the path of the teachers that you you know had challenges with. You know, I think you and I together with sister Eleanor, right? She was in sixth grade and she was one tough cookie. And I remember, you know, both of us, I think, were probably reasonably okay academically, but I do remember being, you know, at the blackboard having my hair pulled, trying to, you know, figure out long division or something like that, and not doing it right enough or something. So I have that recollection, but also I have recollections of some really kind nuns that were there too, that I don't want to forget and not have Sister Eleanor tarnish everybody. I remember Sister Juanita, Sister Rosita, Sister Patrice, Sister Nicholas. They were all really pleasant women with kind souls and so on. So it was this kind of mix of the notorious rough and tumble group and, you know, some of the challenge we had heard back at that time, experience at that time, but also some of the nuns who did care. But I also remember some of the lay teachers. We had, you know, it was probably very controversial back then. Do you remember Miss Orlick got married to Mr. Iovino, the gym teacher? And then she became Iovino, that was a second grade teacher, I think. So that was a memory. I remember in third grade, were we together with Miss Makovsky? Remember Miss Makovsky?
No. So I, in the third grade, I had Sister Patrice.
Yes, Sister Patrice. So she's the older one. So I had Miss Makovsky, who, if you look back at the pictures, she was probably, I don't know, 23 or 24.
Yeah.
Not even.
Yeah, there is a picture floating around.
She's tall and had the short skirt.
Yeah. She wore mini skirts.
Yeah. And I remember going and, you know, staying after school to, you know, I don't know, we were washing the blackboards or something, or clearing out erasers or whatever tasks you did, because I just, you know, liked being around her. And I remember finding her kissing her boyfriend in the cloakroom closet.
Oh, really?
After school. But I knew her because of, got to know her a little bit more. And then her family, Miss Makovsky's family, I think, owned a farm up by down Hempstead Turnpike. It was Great Eastern Mills. Was that the store that was down there? Do you recall?
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think it was a store. It was before the big box stores. It was a big box store. And her family owned the farm that was back there. And then the farm, I guess, was going out of business because they were selling the property to developers. But I remember Makovsky Avenue being there, being by there and seeing that. That's kind of another
wow.
memory for me at that time. And then I remember back to Mr. Iovino, the gym teacher. I don't know, Mick, do you remember? Do we have gym every day or a couple of days a week? I don't recall.
I don't remember every day. I remember Wednesdays being a gym. You know, like there was a specific day, because when we didn't have gym, we had Miss Spera. For music, right? And some of the songs that she taught us still, you know, wake me out of my sleep and stuff. You know, Johnny with the Bandy Legs.
Johnny with the Bandy Legs, yes. Johnny with the Bandy Legs.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember Mr. Iovino. I think it was Mr. Iovino at the time. It was the gym instructor. And we I don't know if you recall this. We were given boxing gloves. We were boxing, you know, as, I don't know, second, third, fourth graders. Probably, I assume we were older, probably third, fourth, fifth graders maybe. And I remember they'd match us up. And I was a taller, skinny kid, but still pretty skinny. And I got matched up. I don't remember if it was Louis Jadis or Glenn Gabriel. I think it was Glenn Gabriel.
Those are big guys.
They're both big guys. They're both big guys. Lou's a monster. And Glenn was pretty big too. I remember boxing, and they would down it. They probably gave us the basics of how to box and how to defend yourself and so on. And then like within 15 seconds of me entering the mat that we were using as our boxing ring, Glenn just clocked me and like lights out, clocked me.
Oh, no kidding.
I think I don't know if I fell to the ground or not, but I kind of was clearly shattered. And I remember them coming up to me after saying, "Oh, are you okay? Okay." And I don't recall much, but I remember like as a kid getting walloped by Glenn at that time with a knockout punch. That was funny. And then we used to play dodgeball all the time, which I know still now is a big thing in New York City. All the young kids are playing that, you know, after work now. But dodgeball was fun. And I remember, you know, kids like, you know, some of the kids were really, really good at it and others not so much. Typically the good sports guys were pretty good at that. But the dodgeball was another memory from Lourdes.
That was a big part of Jim.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, Sister Eleanor, one of the scariest things for me was you talked about, you know, getting a division problem wrong and getting your hair pulled. Richie was in our class that year.
Mm-hmm.
And Richie was called to the board and he did it. And she pushed his face into the blackboard hard. Oh, right now, Richie's crying, but nothing's coming out. There's no noise. So she yells at him to do it again. So he does the math again, but he discovers that there's nothing to change. And she smashes his face for a second time into the board. And he takes a step back and, you know, he had glasses and he's all red because he's practically clear. He's so white that and then the bell rings and she looks down at it and she says, "Oh, that's correct." Now, it was correct to begin with.
Right.
So, wow. I remember thinking, "Oh my God, thank God the bell rang." We go down, to the cafeteria and he is heaving. He's so upset. And I was sitting next to him. We're trying to have lunch. Of course, he's not eating anything. And here she comes down the aisle and smashes him in the face for crying. And you just sit there saying, "Oh my gosh, like, how does this end? How does this story end?" That he doesn't cry and he gets the right answer and you recognize that it's the right answer. You know, it was just this bizarre moment where you really saw the cruelty in what was happening there, you know?
Yeah. No, unfortunately, that was, I don't remember that specific incident, but that doesn't sound too far from my recollection.
Yeah, I always tell the story that Sister Eleanor had the technique of stepping on your foot.
Yes.
As the first.
Yeah.
Right. And then she had you, and now she could do what she wanted. Even think strategically about striking a child. You know, you have to say, gosh, what went wrong in this lady's life that there was so much thought put into, you know, smashing a child in the face, you know?
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, I was a good student. You were a good student. And yet I got hit a lot.
Yeah.
Over things that today you'd be like, what? Why? You got hit because you missed a math problem? You know? Yeah. But she was looking for that opportunity to put you in line.
Yeah. So some more pleasant memories from... Actually, funny enough, we were at a wedding this past weekend and a topic, which I'll get to in a second, came up around, do you remember the bazaars that they used to have
yes,
in the
basement, sure.
In the cafeteria? They'd take the cafeteria, which is under the new building, then the old building, and it would be the two sides, and they would have the
adult bazaar. They open up the doors in between.
Yeah, the adult bazaar would be the fundraiser, probably true fundraiser. They were doing gambling with, I don't know, wheels of, you know, spinning wheels and maybe use a card betting. I don't know what they were doing. I didn't understand it back then. But we would have our time, which would be, I think my recollection is typically around spring that these happened. But I remember looking forward to that week of the bazaar week when we had like half day classes and then we'd go ourselves down and be given, I don't know, $2 or something to spend on, you know, games and whatever we do. I remember fondly about getting ready for that and being kind of a high point. I don't know what you won candy or something. I forget what you won as prizes. I guess some stuffed animals or something.
Yeah.
But I remember that. And then where it relates to this weekend was apparently either part of that or maybe it's a separate activity, but they used to have the Battle of the Bands would go on in the Lord's basement downstairs too. So they would have, I think, local bands, you know, kind of compete for each other, you know, whatever. I don't know who organized it. I don't recall. So someone mentioned Mrs. Cantwell may have been one of the organizers of it. But that they just had this Battle of Bands. And then at the time, the Ramones, who became the famous, you know, kind of punk rock band, we had a couple of their members who lived in Queens Village or something, and they actually performed in 1989, I think, in the Lady Lord's cafeteria or basement.
Yeah, they were friends of my brother Tom's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they. My I didn't know that. Hang out with them, and they were just the local, you know, punks like yeah. like any of us were. but yeah, my brother Tom knew them quite well,
and then
like you said, all of a sudden they became a thing. But they're Queens Village boys.
Yeah, there's at least a couple of them. We at the wedding, we had this debate the other night, and there was debate because everybody knows about Rockaway Beach, and they think, oh, some of them must be from the Rockaways. I said, no, I'm pretty sure a couple from Queens Village. So we
100%.
We left the wedding that the two were from Queens Village and others were somewhere else, but maybe they're all from Queens Village. I don't know.
Yeah, remember that they're brothers. The two of them are the brothers.
Yeah.
And they were the Queens Village.
Johnny and Joey, yeah.
Yeah, and now I don't know the other band members, but I do know that the Ramones were the brothers were yeah. Queens Village boys. Right. You know, they would play at Beggar's Opera.
Beggar's Opera, yeah. My brother James used to work at Beggar's Opera when they used to play.
Yeah, down on Jamaica Avenue, and yeah. So yeah, that you're absolutely correct. You know, you may not remember, but Cindy Lauper also was from our area. I think she was because I used to watch her. We would go to Jones Beach. They had a place where there were bands, and she played in a band called the Blue Angels.
Hmm.
She was the lead singer, but she was not the main person. The main person was the guitarist. And I remember watching her and thinking, she's going to be something someday because she was so unique at that time. I mean, nobody sounded like her, but we saw her on a couple of occasions as a Blue Angel, and it took me a long time to connect Cyndi Lauper with that girl, but that's who that yeah. was.
Yeah. So it's funny you bring up Beggar's Opera, because I remember, you know, if you think of that stretch of Jamaica Avenue, that was another kind of cultural icon from my memory of what the stretch from, you know, because again, being Western Village, from Springfield Boulevard down to, you know, roughly 212th Street, let's say. The businesses that were along that stretch, you know, from the Reliance Bank that we used to have our Christmas Club accounts that you'd go and contribute, I don't know, 50 cents or a dollar or something
yep.
like that.
Yep.
And you'd get your Christmas fund. That was, you know, genius marketing to get money and for no interest. You know? And then you'd have the Super 5 and 10 was down there on 219th, yeah. I think. And John Gordon, Woolworth was there, and John Gordon, we go for our school uniforms, the gray pants and the black belt and the blue tie and the white shirt. You went shopping there.
Yeah, and someone brought up John Gordon's the other day that they, you know, they got there, blah blah blah, from John Gordon's, and I was like, that's the only place you got your clothes from.
That's all you could be shot from. The Woolworths obviously would have with the soda fountain thing. They just have the banana split balloons along. They used to pop the balloon to determine how much you paid. I think I did that once because we didn't buy many banana splits back in that day. And then we used to work. So some of us from the West Queens Village crew used to work over in the delis over on between 213th and 214th and Jamaica Avenue. So I don't know if you remember, there was a German deli. Then there was Georgie's candy store in the middle, yeah. and there's the Italian deli, Pellegrino's was called, on the corner.
Yes.
And the Pellegrino's was the competing. That was a bigger one. It was two Ronnie and Ivan were the two owners of it at the time, and then the German deli was remember Artie was one of the owners, a couple of the German guys that used to own that, and Rich Gunn, I think. And Mike Lumbo both got jobs in the German deli first, you know, working in that deli. And then we all eventually worked through with them with, you know, for a little bit of time. Then everybody migrated over to Pellegrino's as the German deli kind of went a little bit of a downspin, it changed hands. Right. And so on. So we're all working at Pellegrino's on the corner. And that was a whole social scene around all the kids that used to work there. So Mike Lumbo, myself, Rich Gunn. Christine Dredger was they were actually even further west than we were. They were from the I want to say Incarnate or Jacques Manan. I forget who there was another Catholic school on Francis Lewis Boulevard. They were further west than we were. But there was a whole crew that was there that was worked at Pellegrino's, and we, you know, socialized after work together and so on. But that was our thing. I remember working 10 to 10s. That was the big shift was you go from, you know, 10 a.m. in the morning to 10 p.m. at night for whatever $1.50 or $1.75 we were making an hour there. And that was our money. That was our spending money for whatever we do on weekends.
Yeah, I worked across the street at the A&P.
At the A&P, yes.
Yeah.
On 24.
My father got me a job there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Marty worked there. I remember Marty Brady worked there as a checkout person.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hysterical. Wow. You have a very different perspective.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, you're a mile away from where I lived, and yet your perspective is just totally, like you said, culturally, these areas had different feelings to them.
Right, right. But it's funny how a lot of the things that we did were kind of the same. You know, like, be it the games we played, be it the you made a list before of things that we used to do, and we used to do the same stuff. It's just that we were a mile away. And
I think New York, someone sent out a video of the games we played in New York, and it was, you know, it was stickball and steam and ring-a-lee-vio, and Riles told the story of playing Victim of the Bug. Do you remember that?
I don't remember. I remember Johnny Ride a Pony. That was a rough game.
Johnny on the Pony, but
You guys, the Braddock Park crew was more massive. So we used to go, like, let's go to Braddock Park and play Johnny Ride a Pony. And I remember, like, someone broke an arm or something like that from playing that game. And I don't remember what was it. You'd line up, like, you'd have a tree in front of you, and you'd make a line, and someone would jump on the back, your back.
So there were two teams, and you needed about 8 to 12 people on each team. So the first person is the pillow, and usually it was a girl, because you were just kind of laying there so that nobody had their shoulder into the tree.
Okay.
And then everybody would bend at the waist and put their one arm around the person in front of them. And you would lock into a line. The other team's goal was to run, jump off the last person in line, and land in the middle with the intention of breaking the line.
Oh, wow.
If you broke the line, you won, and you got to do it again. And if the line held after the entire other team got on, then it was their turn to run. But we used to play that with the older guys, and it was just brutal.
Yeah, that was the Braddock Park had that reputation of that game. People would go there to play that game.
it was a serious game. All of the pictures were holding one of our limbs, you know? That was great. A good game.
So what else, Mick? We got a couple more minutes here. I don't want to overtake too much. Actually, we're over.
No, I think this is it's just a totally
what
different.
What other questions did you ask of people?
Well, did you have a best friend? Was there a best friend of yours? I mean, for most of us, that was a rotating thing.
Yeah,
right? That was the beauty of it.
Yeah. We used to have the group we talked about before was a fairly close group. So again, Franny, Mike Lembo, Rich, you, and so on. We were a fairly close group. And at that time, I think there was, you know, from time to time that we'd have different camaraderies that would exist. But I remember not being, one over another. You know, over the years, Mike Lembo and I became very close. So I actually was the I was the best man at his wedding. And Mike, although I wish I could speak to him more, we still stay in touch. You know, we exchange calls probably every couple of months.
And is he in New York?
He's actually down in Pennsylvania, or Pennsylvania, as he calls it. He's out west of Philadelphia. And the name escapes me right now of his community, but he's married. He actually has married to his second wife, Ginny, who's lovely, and he has three kids. And they're all three kids are now, I guess his son is still at Louisville in school, but the other, his two daughters are both graduated and out of the house. So I'm still in touch with him. So I'd be close. I was close to him probably more in our 20s and 30s.
Oh, interesting.
Back in our age in school, I remember being pretty close to Rich, like you were for a bit. Rich and I were pretty close. And I remember like a funny joke. I remember having a conversation with Rich, declaring him my best friend or something like that. And then I used to get teased for it because my cousin, Mike Maroney, should have been my best friend too. And he used to sing songs, the Queen song, "You're My Best Friend." And I used to get teased for that, I remember. So it was like a couple of times where we had chosen, somebody over another, but I don't recall like over an extended period.
Yeah. I think, when we've talked about this with other people as well, I think that was part of the beauty of it. You had this ability to be quote unquote best friends with a number of guys simultaneously. And it was never this idea that you had to pick, I felt close to all you guys. I can remember feeling very close to Mike Limbo and Franny. I remember coming to your house a lot, knocking on the side door.
I remember being very close, feeling very close to you. And you were a celebrity for us, coming over from the cool side. I remember, I'm not friends with Vicky Pote. Yeah. So it's interesting. And I was coming from a place of, I used to get teased a lot as a kid, because I was my mother was Puerto Rican and she had her accent. And
I remember your mother, but I don't remember that as a, like something that stands out.
I'm getting teased when I was younger quite a bit.
Really?
Even from my friends, even from, to this day, Mike Limbo would say Johnny El Spico, he'd call me that, and there'd be a lot of Puerto Rican jokes around that. I was only half Puerto Rican, but, and half Irish, just like all the rest of the people on the block. Mike was, like, allegedly Italian, but he really was Ukrainian. His mother was Ukrainian, so. But he's always eat Italian food, and he was kind of, a little bit of a chunky kid growing up. So, Mike, I'm sorry saying that, if you hear this, but it was funny at that time. But I do remember getting teased for a bit and feeling a little bit of a, I don't know, inferiority complex type thing. So hanging out with cool people was a cool thing to do then. And you brought a lot of that Braddock Park vibe over to our part of town. So
it's funny because I remember you being, one of the smart kids. In my memory, you were not, I don't want to say bookish, but I can remember coming to your house and you saying stuff like, I have to finish my homework first, or, something that was very diligent of you. And I was thinking, wow, that's kind of impressive.
Well, I had, my mom was a school teacher. So my mom taught for New York City Public Schools for 25 years. And she had two master's degrees in education. And she was all in on education. I was with my mom last night. So she's 86, still going strong at the wedding last night. But she was the person who, education first. And even to our family, to my kids, it carries forward. She's always willing to help out in any way, shape, or form to our family members keep education first. So that was always a big focus. So it was probably a little bit of the, I had to get my homework done.
I just remember that about you, for sure. And you had a brother, right?
I have two brothers. So my brother James, I was again with last night. James was 2 years younger, so he was more.
Okay, that's who I remember.
Age. And then Jimmy, your brother, 2 years or 1 year younger than you?
2 years.
2 years. So he was same age as my brother James. So
yeah,
Jimmy,
that's right.
James, same age. And then my brother Chris was 3 years younger. And then Crazy Caroline, of course, you remember.
Yes.
So I remember you used to tease her and like Chris.
She was a sweetie.
Crazy Caroline. So I saw her last night as well. That's my family. And we're still close. My brother Chris is down in Florida right now, down in Jacksonville area. He has three kids, his two sons and daughter. The two sons both graduated from Florida State, like Chris did. And then his daughter is now playing lacrosse at a school, I think it's South Carolina. And so she's got a couple more years of college to go.
And Franny's in New York?
Yeah, Franny lives, he married Debbie Farrell, right across the girl across the street. Lives still in Levittown, I believe, on Long Island.
Oh, really?
He was working for I think the city or the state, I'm not sure. I think it's the city department of buildings doing like building inspections and maintenance at, you know, kind of building complexes in the city. And then Debbie wound up becoming a postal worker. And so, and I think both of the Murphy older sisters became postal workers too at one point. And so they do that. So Franny, I unfortunately see Franny like at funerals and weddings. That's really the only time I see him nowadays, but we still stay in touch. I could drop him a note right now and he'll pick up the phone and we'll really quickly. It's one of those things. I think also that, yeah, I don't know if it's unique to Queens Village, but like even now, how many years has it been that we've spent this much time on the phone together? I'd say it's decades, and I feel like nothing changed. And with Franny and me, it's the same thing. I could call Franny, and our lives are completely different paths. But I could be on with Franny and either meet him at a wake or at a wedding, or if I called him right now, and there'll be no time gap. You know.
So what do you attribute that to? And this is a question I ask everybody as well. I don't meet anybody, and I mean zero people, that have this experience where I'll talk to someone and they'll think that I might be talking about my college friends or maybe people in my neighborhood. And I'm saying to them, well, no, actually, the guy I just got off the phone with, he went to kindergarten with me. And then they're blown away by that. But then I say, and there's 40 others just like him. What do you attribute that to?
I was thinking about that because we've been to, and I know you haven't been. Yeah, I guess you had other reunion, like mini reunions. But I remember that we had the formal reunions that Mary Ann Cook used to organize for us. And we'd get together and it would be like 20 people, 25 people from our class that, again, we hadn't seen in a long time. There's a lot of the pictures like you have on the site have some of those gatherings together.
Yes.
I think it was a little bit awkward in the beginning because not everybody was close to everybody. But when you have those relationships, they're life. They're there forever. I think the group that we used to hang around with in those early years, I'd feel very comfortable any of them to call at a moment's notice, ask a favor. Have a quick chat, catch up on something. It's just there it's always been there and it will always be there, and I just accept it as is. And I see that I lived out in California like you do now for a bit, and it's much more transient relationships in California.
Agreed,
here where you have a very, you can meet somebody, you can have very good friends in California. I have some amazing friends from California, but it's not the same relationship as those of us who got beat up by Sister Eleanor, together in sixth grade. and it's just a different, I can't put my finger on it, Mick. It's a different, something. There's something there that keeps us together and binds us. And podcast will find that thread.
To the point where, when I was living in Israel, I got a call from Doug Seacat.
Yeah.
And he was in the military. He's a military contractor. And he said, hey, I'm going to be in Tel Aviv. You want to come up and, get a beer or a sandwich or something? And I was like, wow. Now, he didn't think twice about that.
Yep.
Right. Now, I hadn't seen the guy since eighth grade, I guess. And when we met, we had a blast. It was a really enjoyable, easy meeting. There was no awkward, except for the one fact that he had changed physically so much that I could have walked right by him.
Right.
I never would have known. He came up to me because I haven't changed.
Yeah.
And he said, Mickey. And I was like, no way that you're Doug. And he said, yeah. but to your point, it is a unique feeling to feel comfortable and for the other person to feel that comfort after 30, 40 years of not seeing each other, and then to be able not just to say hi, but let's go get a bite to eat. And that also goes really easily.
Yep. Yep. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, Mick. There's something there. And I think it's culturally, again, we talked about East versus West Coast of US, I definitely see much more, again, transient relationships out west. I think if I spend some time in Europe, and if Israel is the same for you or not, but I know there's deeper kind of family relationships that transcend the decades in Europe. Right. But the friend relationships, even there, I'd say it would be rare that people would have 20, you know, I don't know how many would get together if we had a reunion tomorrow, Mick, but I bet you could easily get 25 to 30 people.
Yeah. Well, so I'll end with this. I did interview Marianne, and she agreed to do, I think it's going to be our 50th anniversary, 50th graduation anniversary from eighth grade next year.
So that's 70. That's 75, right? So 70.
75. That's right. And next year is 25. So 50 years. And she's going to do a reunion. I want to say the end of May, beginning of June.
Wow. That's great. I don't remember talking after the last one and offering, because she carried a lot of the burden of that.
He did. Yes.
Thank you, Marianne, for hearing this, because you're amazing, amazing woman for doing that. But I'd offered to try to help if I could, to find people or something. But that offer still stands. I'd love to help
coordinate. I think this time around, we're really going to make it a team effort. I mean, she'll do all the organizing, because that's what she likes and that's what she's good at. But I think it will behoove all of us to take our fair share of people and make sure that they show up, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's fair. As long as she doesn't make me line dance, I'm
I'm with you. All right, John.
All right, Mick, this has been awesome. Thank you. And others from Queens Village, Braddock, and Our Lady of Lourdes, hopefully some of these memories mean something to you too. I'd love to listen to the other 12 hours that Mick has already collected for us. And Mick, thank you for organizing this whole thing. I don't know where this boat is sailing to, but I think it's pretty cool going for a ride.
I don't know where it's going, but I do like the ride. So
yep.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Talk to you soon.